my sins. Since you've been working on cannabis and spirituality, I'm wondering what thoughts you might have about the sort of contemporary cannabis culture practice in this country, ways in which it might be going astray, ways in which it might be headed in a positive direction.
Well, I have a peculiar position on legalization, which is not shared by most of the people in the movement. I'm not very enthusiastic about the whole idea of legalization for a number of reasons. Needless to say, I would like to have an amnesty in the war on drugs. That I would definitely hope for, and a release of all the some half million prisoners of conscience, or even political or religious prisoners, if you want to look at it that way, who are in stir in America for simple possession or other victimless crimes. But I don't really believe in legalization under present circumstances, because I think that we would find ourselves in a situation where Monsanto would get the would soon own the patent on the DNA of cannabis sativa and cannabis indica, which would be a big disaster, because they'll do to marijuana what the conquistadors did to tobacco, which was to turn it from a shamanic drug into an addictive commodity. Another thing that would happen would, in the first place, why do we need permission from the government? That always puzzles me. Why do so many people invest so much emotion into asking permission of this wretched government? You know, this totally senseless, evil fucking regime that we live under. Please, can we smoke pot? Fuck 'em, is my view. That's important. Another important point was brought up by Terence McKenna, who said that a little known but very important factor is that almost all the serious research into medical marijuana, into psychedelic psychotherapy, and into actual opening up new realms of entheogenic and psychedelic research is all funded by old hippie pot dealers. Because the funding is not coming from anywhere else. If you wonder why there's any work being done in this area at all, it's because old hippie pot dealers with a bit of a social conscience and a need to launder cash somewhere are supporting it. And if legalization came, this would end immediately, because the first enemy of the government would then be not the user anymore, but the growers and dealers, who would be still very much against the law. And all the power of the police would then be aimed against them. So this marvelous source of funding for underground research would dry up. And I could go on and on. You know, I do not appreciate a lot of the what I would consider weak liberal and badly thought out ideas behind the legalization movement. I mean, yes, I would love to live in a country that wasn't insane. You know. But you find me such a country, and it's not Holland, by the way. And I'll move there, you know. Meanwhile, I'll stay here and struggle, I suppose. So is that going to answer your question about my attitudes? Yes?
I don't know how familiar you are with youth, culture around this. I'm definitely interested in what you just had to say, but I'm also interested in what you think about current usages, like not regardless of what the government position is, but the current, practices of use of that medicine.
Cannabis itself?
Yeah, in this country.
Well, I mean, the most exciting, the most interesting thing that's going on now is about the medical marijuana. And, the government, the cops will say, this medical marijuana thing is just a cover for they want to grow pot and get high. And it's futile to deny that. That is what we're after, But at the same time, it's true that marijuana is a fantastically good medicine for a lot of sicknesses. And in six states, they had referendums in which the people of those states said, yes, we agree, marijuana is a good medicine, it should be allowed. And in every single case, the federal government has tried to overturn the will of the people. So we're into actually a fascinating states' rights constitutional issue here that no one's actually said that yet, but this is a constitutional issue. If a state holds a referendum and it's the clear will of the people that such and such be the law, by what right does the federal government have to tell them that this referendum is meaningless? I just read today the governor of Hawaii has made noises about legalizing medical marijuana in Hawaii. So hats off to him, whoever he is. I have no idea who the guy is. And in California, there's politicians who are in favor of it too, but they're met with distrust and obstruction at every step along the way by federal agents. So I think there's a potential for a kind of a civil strife, if not civil war, looming on this mm-hmm. question right now. And that would be the most profound change that's been happening in the past 10 years, I would say. Okay, was there another? Somebody behind you? Yeah.
Two things. One is a commentary and the other is a question. Regarding Marco Polo, in Chinese history, during that dynasty, he went to China.
That's right.
There's actually no record of him ever being appointed as official.
I know. Which is a lot of mysteries about Mr. Polo.
Yeah, which is very interesting to me, because if he did go through all this trouble to go all the way there, he was a fantastic traveler and historian. But if he didn't, he was a fantastic storyteller.
Yeah. And a fairly accurate one, too, although right. you can catch him up in, like any traveler, he makes tons of mistakes and his right. memory's not that. And you have to realize also he was dedicating to this guy, Rusticano de Pisa, in jail.
That's right.
They were both in stir at the time. And they probably, and Rusticano de Pisa was a big liar. I mean, you know, he wrote chivalric romances, and that, I mean, he was basically an artisto, you know? So who knows what his input was in the Marco Polo book. And there are several, there's even variant texts from the very period of Polo's lifetime. So some more complete, some less complete. There's lots of controversies. There's never any end to the articles that get written in obscure historical and geographical journals about was he there? Did he just hear about it from somebody else? Was he lying? Is he full of shit? You know. And yeah, I mean, it's true. In the court records in China, but maybe he's being referred to under his Chinese pseudonym. You know, maybe they gave him a Chinese name, and maybe he used that. And then he didn't bother to tell de Pisa that he had a Chinese name. De Pisa wouldn't have understood it anyway, so right. what would have been the point, you know?
The second is a question. The disciple of Isaba who went to Syria, what's his name again?
Rashiduddin Sinan. Rashid al-Din Sinan, S-I-N-A-N.
Do you know of any good books by him? Because he was a fascinating character.
There's no book by him.
I'm sorry, about him.
And there is no book about him either. But the best book on the history of the assassins is by Marshall Hodgson, H-O-D-G-S-O-N. And I believe it's just called The Assassins, or it might be called History of the Assassins. Okay. And there you'll find the most authentic material on Sinan.
Okay, thank you.
There's one other great book, too, also by an Ismaili writer, Farhad Daftari, D-A-F-T-A-R-Y, published by Cambridge University Press in England, and that is called The Ismailis. And that's the history from the Ismaili point of view by an Ismaili scholar, very well grounded, but he's got a bit of an axe to grind. D-A-F-T-A-R-Y, Daftari, Farhad Daftari. Very great book, wonderful book. But we still need another book from someone who's not... Daftari, yeah, like I said, he's a believer, so he has a certain point of view he's presenting and not other points of view.
Thank you.
But between those two books, you'll get a very good outline.
I really don't know that you're the person to ask, but because I've lost total track of this, I'm just gonna see if you do. A few years ago, they had taken it all the way to the Supreme Court, I believe, that certain Indian tribes were not going to be allowed to use peyote or their mushrooms or anything, even in their religious ceremonies. Are you aware of what happened to that? Did it fall through the cracks? I mean, what happened?
What happened is it got reversed again. That was the Religious Freedom Act, so-called, and there was a clause in it that would have reversed all the all the permission that has been given legally to the Native American Church to use peyote as a sacrament. And that finding was reversed. So we're back again to a position where if you have red blood, you're allowed to take peyote. If you have white or black blood, you go to jail if you take peyote. And they don't. And they say that that this is no longer a racist country. You know, that is so extraordinary. You know, if you're a redskin, you can take dangerous drugs, but if you're white, you need protection. I mean, what is the attitude here? It's incomprehensible. A little while ago, one of the leading elders of the Peyote Church in, I think, Arizona, he had a big garden with, he was growing peyote and other legal psychotropics, they raided him and they destroyed his garden and they carried him and his family off, and it's all without any legal sanction whatsoever because the Native American Church is supposed to have permission to do these things. But this didn't stop the police from just coming in and destroying the poor man's garden. So this is a big legal case going on now. They're trying to get some of the plants back from the police. Hopefully they haven't died yet and so forth and so on. And eventually it'll come to court and they'll get off. But their life will have been ruined. Their religion will have been insulted, and their garden of peyote, which is becoming an endangered plant, by the way, because of over-harvesting by stupid tourists in Mexico, a very valuable crop of a genetic bank of peyote gone, all without any legal sanction whatsoever. So what difference does the law make? This is why I say, why bother to ask permission from these bastards? You know, just exercise a little caution, because they're after you, whether it's the law is on your side or not. And that's the truth. And maybe someday there'll be a recognition in this country that religious freedom also includes people of every race, creed, and color, as they like to say, and sex. Yeah, I forgot that. Mm.
I think this is now as it always has been. I think it's an ancient battle between this so-called mind that calls itself rational and its hatred for the ecstatic personality. And it's metaphorically represented in the Dionysian issues. But, I mean, this has been addressed in Congress, for instance, by Margaret Mead. There was a moment in time hard on the heels of the 60s. And Ginsburg. Now, when Ginsburg began fighting to legalize marijuana, and that has very often been the only simplistic, I mean, it ranks at about the level of Martin Luther. All he wanted was for the Catholic Church to stop selling heaven.
Yeah, you got a lot
and
more.
Suddenly, it all turned into the Protestants, you know? So it's like that, and Margaret Mead addressed Congress on the issue of it is ethically inappropriate for legislators to legislate the legality of their preferred intoxicant. So you can get drunk on booze.
And kill yourself in the car.
Yeah, and what she was saying was that marijuana was simply another intoxicant.
To which there are no deaths attached, even by the police.
Yeah.
Even the police can't come up with a single marijuana death.
Now, I want to ask you a question. Hmm. I was in London when Reagan dropped the bomb on Gaddafi.
Hmm.
And, I mean, everybody had been saying, my God, is he going to drop the bomb? Of course he's not going to drop the bomb. Well, you know, Reagan, of course he's going to drop the bomb. So he dropped the bomb. The next morning, I look at the newspaper, he's dropped the bomb. I felt so ashamed and embarrassed. I thought, if anybody asks me where I'm from, I'm going to say Canada. You know? Now, hard on the heels of that, the American airline system began to require that persons accompany their baggage, because they knew bombs were going to start working. Gaddafi went into the hospitals for the terminally ill, and within that framework, which I tend to put like prior to the voyages of discovery in our own network, like prior to the act of will as accessible, There is the sense that if you're having a really hard time, it's because you've done something rotten and God doesn't like you. Now, that particular line of the world never got the voyages of discovery or never did that shift, or maybe they're more adamant or something. But if you do something rotten there, God doesn't like you. So in the terminally ill sections of hospitals, those people are not only terminally ill, but they're also extraordinarily guilty. And their families are in a condition of shame because they are terminally ill, which means that even if nobody can remember it, they've done something terrible, right? Yeah. Gaddafi went in and promised them heaven. If these terminally ill persons would accompany luggage on airlines, knowing that the bomb was going to go off when they were in the air.
Where'd you get this from?
The newspapers.
Yeah, well, you've got to be careful about newspapers.
You know, so Gaddafi. You think that didn't happen?
I don't know whether it happened or not, but you've got to be careful.
Gaddafi apparently did that, and there were people who realized they could redeem themselves by doing that, but what I really wanted to know is where would Gaddafi have got the power to make this offer?
Oh, in his own mind, you mean?
No, I mean, it would have to be within the framework,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
A very complex question, Bobby, because, you know, most Americans think that Gaddafi is just another Muslim fundamentalist. He's not at all. He's a major enemy of the Muslim fundamentalists. So he's got his own brand of Islam, basically. And it's very much based on the Sufi tradition in Libya, and I view him as a Sufi socialist of some kind. And in fact, people often forget that his revolution was in 1969. The date itself ought to make you perk up and wonder about his intellectual antecedents, which included, by his own account, Colin Wilson's The Outsiders, was his favorite book at the time. And a couple of months in London in 1967 or 68, I think it was. In 65, right at the, you know, beginning of the whole thing. I mean, Gaddafi is a Muslim hippie, basically. And he's completely, the mullahs in Egypt despise this man. They think he's a maniac. He's denied authority to the hadith, the traditions of the Prophet, which is something that no Sunni could ever do. So he's no longer even a Sunni. What is he? I mean, it's Libyan Islam at this point. It's a unique brand. And it's very clear that Gaddafi himself considers himself to be inspired in the Sufi tradition. Oh yeah, and then the other thing is that, of course, that this legend of the assassin still has prestige in the Islamic world. And the whole self-sacrificial thing, the people who did the car bombs in Beirut and so forth and so on, the people who sacrificed themselves in the jihad, in the holy war, it's always intriguing and interesting to hark back to the original assassins and wonder whether there isn't some inspiration there, or at least a body of legendary that one consciously or unconsciously draws on. Then, in response to your first thing where you talked about the eternal battle between rationality and ecstasy, again, I think it's a little more complicated than that. When you look at the arguments of the so-called pro-drug forces now, you find that they're painstakingly rational. They're all based on scientific research, some of it unauthorized, but nonetheless scientific for that, and on a clear and rational reading of the Constitution. I mean, these are rationalists. And on the other side, the cops and the politicians are completely out to lunch. There's no logic in what they're saying at all. There's no good science there. There's no good sociology. There's no good politics. It's all crap. So I like to say that rationality is a rare psychedelic experience that only a few people have and seems to be connected with drug use. Yeah, ecstasy too, but you know. All right. One more. Are we good? Do we have time? Are we doing all right for time?
A quick personal question. Can you describe your own religious spiritual lineage?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, I spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and I talked to a lot of Sufis, and, you know, spent a lot of time in India, turned on with a lot of sadhus, you know. So that's it in a nutshell. But I don't think it's the right time and place to go into personal details. So I don't want to, you know, stiff you or anything, but it just doesn't seem right. Anything else? Anybody else? Okay, well, thank you very much.